Alan Bro on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Well, I promised you that Tony Martin would be in the studio, and he's not in the studio. He is on the phone. Tony Martin, how are you?
Not bad, Alan. I've been trying to get into your studio for the last hour. It's like Escape from New York out on the streets. Have you seen what's going on? There's like those white and orange plastic things all the way up St Kilda Road. I was redirected to Geelong. Trying to drive there. You cannot. I don't know how you got there this morning. Is there sports going on? What's happening?
There's marathon running.
Oh, that's just foolish. Why would they do that?
Oh, that's exactly what I think. Running 42 kilometres. And what happens at the end? A drink.
Well, I can understand why some idiots might want to do that, but who would want to watch that?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's... Well, no one's allowed to watch it because you can't get close enough to it, obviously.
This is ridiculous. I'm so sorry, Alan.
Oh, no, no, don't be sorry at all. I blame marathon running.
I blame everything. Society in general. I blame Harry Connick Jr.
Yes, Harry Connick Jr. is to blame for it all. The sooner he leaves, the better it'll be.
Did you see those donkeys dressed up as zebras on the Gaza Strip on the news? Did you see those?
No, I didn't.
There's a zoo on the Gaza Strip, and during a war, a recent skirmish, crossfire, two zebras were shot dead. So they've got two donkeys, and they've just painted black and white stripes on them, and the kiddies think they're zebras. And Harry Connick Jr. finds them half offensive. There, I've said it.
Well, Tony, it's always a great pleasure to talk to you, and I imagine you're in the middle of a flurry of publicity for your new book, A Nest of Occasionals.
Yeah, there isn't. It is like Where's Wally on the TV schedules at the moment. I don't think I've been on Gardening Australia, but I may possibly be dropped in with digital effects, just so that I've been on everything.
It's a wonderful book, and the title for it comes from your time in radio in New Zealand, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, I wrote a radio commercial once, and it was in the early days of radio, FM radio, when you had to have less words. So I dropped the word tables, and was nearly sacked for just having the phrase a nest of occasionals. So I figured, you know, 25 years later, that could be a phrase that had caused so much trouble could be usefully served as the title of a book. But this sort of use of language, I was always getting into trouble for stuff like that. I may have told you I once had to do, when I was working in the art department at an ad agency, I had to do some labels for air freshener, and the flavour of the air freshener was forest pine. And I had 3,000 labels printed with the flavour as pine forest. And the guy just went mental. He's going, what are you doing? You can't say pine forest. And I'm going, well, what's the difference? He's going, well, forest pine, that rolls off the tongue. It sounds lyrical. It sounds Swedish, forest pine. Whereas pine forest just sounds like an effing pine forest. So Nest of Occasionals was another one of those. So now, and also, I figured Nest of Occasionals sounded kind of like my family, which has undergone a number of cast changes over the years.
Oh, yeah, and I want to talk particularly about your grandmother in a minute, because the final chapter, I must admit, is one of my favourites. Things to do in Tika Whiti.
Oh, thanks.
I want to talk about the radio a little bit more, because, I mean, we have been friends for quite some time, and it's interesting reading of your friend's book, because you discover all these things you didn't know, like the fact that you pioneered an amazing form of furniture advertising where you and another man pretended to be Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, basically.
Well, me and a friend of mine, neither of us could do Dudley Moore, so it was like Peter Cook and Peter Cook. And we just invented these characters, Dennis and Neville, that were just like basically rip-offs of Pete and Dud. And we would just, whatever occurred to us at the time, we would just run into the booth and record ads for them. And there was one, oh, look, I don't even know what I can say on radio here.
Yeah.
Gee, there was it's too obscene. It's certainly in the book. But there was one that was considered a bit blue, so we got sacked. But then a nightclub in Tauranga called up and wanted those fictional characters to be the front people for their campaign. So it was like these fictional characters were doing better than me. for a while there.
Also, one of the things, another thing I love about the radio is when you were shown into the room where the records that they never played were, and you discovered all these interview records.
Now, Alan, you would have loved this room because we were on the top floor of the Federated Farmers Building in Hamilton.
Oh, I know it well.
And Midge Marsden, you know Midge Marsden,
yep,
the blues singer, he said to me, "You've got to check out this room downstairs." And it was this spooky room, there was no windows, with just piles and piles and piles of boxes of records. And it was the room where they just put all the records that never got even opened, let alone played. Because this is like 1983, 84. So, you know, on air, anything by REO Speedwagon or Journey or Foreigner, straight onto the playlist. But for every one of those, there'd be 100 albums by someone like Pere Ubu, or the Gang of Four, or Cabaret Voltaire, or Fad Gadget.
Oh, Fad Gadget. They don't get enough of a run anymore.
So they're just downstairs, not even opened. It was so sad, just piling up. And I found, yeah, this shelf which had all these records by, which had no sleeves on them. They just had the artist's name. So I took them upstairs, and they were interview records. And these were quite common. They would send them out to radio stations all over the world and say David Bowie. It would say David Bowie on it, and then there would be a sheet of questions, and so the local announcer in, say, you know, Geelong, might go, joining us on Sunday morning to talk about his work with Brian Eno in Berlin, it's David Bowie. And then he'd press play, and the first cut on the record would be, "It's wonderful to be here." And so it was all these answers. And you just go, tell us about your new album. And then it would just be a pre-recorded answer so that David Bowie wouldn't have to go to 500 individual stations. They just send out the record. So there were hundreds of these things. And, we decided to, wouldn't it be fun to change the questions? And that's quite a common thing now. But in those days, it was like witchcraft was afoot at the local radio station. And I decided, we don't even have to interview them. We can just have bizarre scenarios. So one, I remember I was having a doubles ping pong match with Tom Waits, David Bowie, and Bob Dylan, I think, at one point. Just misusing these interview records. So that was the first thing I did that was kind of successful.
I'm speaking with Tony Martin about his book, A Nest of Occasionals, which has just come out very recently and is absolutely delightful. One of the features of the book is your ability to get yourself in uncomfortable situations,
yes,
which I believe is unrivaled. But a lot of them seem to occur around dining tables.
Well, there's, which one are you thinking of? Because there's a few in the book. I always find that, I don't know if other people have this, but I will say something and then I can hear in my head that Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm music coming in. Boom, boom, boom. I get one of those every week, pretty much.
No, because your family are mad for an uncomfortable silence, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, uncomfortable silences were just constantly scheduled in our family. But I do tell a story in the air of my father, or my stepfather at the time. My brother Les would try and diffuse the uncomfortable silences by burping at will. And I was unable to burp, so one time I just said the word burp. I just went burp, never thought anything about it. And then about an hour later, my stepfather leapt over the terrace of the house where I was smoking a lolly cigarette. Not smoking it, sucking it, but I did have a cigarette case, a silver cigarette case for my lolly cigarette. An affectation that took several beatings to see off. And he's got me in a headlock. He said, "Don't you ever say that again." And I'm thinking, what did I say? And it wasn't until years later that I overheard my mother having a conversation where she revealed that my stepfather's hated nickname at school was Bert. And I'd said burp, and he'd heard it as Bert. And as I say in the book, that to this day, that has never been cleared up, that sort of misunderstanding. I'm trying to find the bit in the book right now, but I think I say, to this day, that tiny misunderstanding has never been cleared up. In our family, we like to let things like that fester to the point where it seems perfectly reasonable to institute legal proceedings. Sorry.
No, because I find it, my family were incredible. There was very few of us, and, it was all pretty normal. And your family are just, there seems to be more of them every year almost that you discover, like you found a new sister. And they're all, well, in the final chapter in the book, I think, is it the first sentence you say, there are plenty of stories about my grandmother, stories that by and large don't bear repeating.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, could you repeat some of them, or are they too blue as well?
Well, she was fairly foul-mouthed, my grandmother, who died at the age of 93 back in 1994. But I went back to this town, yeah, earlier this year. I went back to Tikawiti, New Zealand, which I hadn't been to in 38 years. And it was pretty much exactly the same, except for a Bunnings had been lowered onto the town. And I started asking around about my grandmother. And, yeah, I was stopping people in the street, like old, you know, people, you know, in their 80s and 90s, just going past on little motorized scooters. And the nicest thing that someone said about my grandmother is that she was quite a character. The word poisonous was used several times. Extremely nasty was a phrase. Disruptive. Insane. There was one, just insane. This is from polite old people, so you know that, you know, if that's the polite version, I can't imagine what the real version was. But my aunt and her had a feud for over 60 years, and I tracked down my aunt, who's in her 80s, and I said, what is it? Because it's very shady about what my grandmother actually used to do before she was the town florist. And my aunt said, well, she was run out of Auckland, you know, for entertaining sailors. I'd never heard that phrase before, entertaining sailors.
And I presume that didn't mean her work in the theatre.
No, it wasn't a juggling act, as far as I know, but she... Yes, she was run out for being simply too entertaining. But they feuded on, and yes, my aunt was just listing all the things that my grandmother had done. She had attacked her with a rake. She'd tried to burn her house down. She accused my aunt of attempting to poison her on several occasions. I found the bit in the book here. Dawn, that's my aunt. Dawn explains that whenever Nana, that's my grandmother, was served a meal at Dawn's house, she would say, I suppose there's poison in this. For the fiercely atheistic Nana, this line became her version of grace. No one could begin eating until Nana had claimed that someone was trying to kill her.
I'm speaking with Tony Martin about his new book, A Nest of Occasionals, and his murderous grandmother. Now, one of the things, there's some just little fleeting descriptions or you know, references to things in the book which I absolutely love. One of them is that the picture theatre in Tikawiti has been turned into a church.
That's right.
And in Hawera, where I was born, the picture theatre was turned into a church, and it happens quite often in rural New Zealand, and it's really quite sort of off-putting, isn't it?
Well, this one, I think I've found a bit, it says the State Theatre is no longer a picture theatre, it's some sort of church called Journey, with a logo that makes it look like a mid-90s nightclub. I can't tell what religion it is, judging from the sign, it's one where, as you enter the afterlife, a big Samoan bloke stamps your wrist. But, there's just these bizarre... I mean, Journey, I mean, that was a band. Steve Perry, that's the end of The Sopranos to me. But no, apparently Journey is a new religion. So I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone affiliated with Journey.
And another thing you bring up, and I hadn't thought about this for years, is Danger UXB, the television programme.
Danger UXB was a show about a bomb defusal squad.
In World War II.
Would people... See, what happens with us, Alan, is that a lot of... it seems that there was a lot more English on television in New Zealand. So a lot of these shows weren't actually here. Like, whenever I mention the phrase, oh no, it's Selwyn Froggatt, people just look at me mystified. But that was a very popular British sitcom when I was a kid.
Yeah. Maybe it's where you're using that phrase that leaves them mystified, though.
Well, it's just... Can I just read the bit about Danger UXB?
Please do. I'd love you to.
This is about awkward silences in our family. The best emollient for an angry silence is television. I recall a long series of Saturday evenings on which my mother and I, not speaking, would relax in front of a show called Danger UXB, an incredibly tense drama about a World War II bomb disposal unit. The endless, tautly wound defusal sequences in which perspiring Tommies would hold their breaths and hope like hell it was the red wire provided a soothing alternative to the relentless familial tension, as yet another cast member made a fatal decision while using the secateurs and got blown through the roof of a church. Mum would clap her hands together and say, right then, who's for a cup of tea? And as the remnants of Anthony Andrews were fished out of a tree and identified by his wailing loved ones, the good biscuits would come out and a tea-led warmth would slowly suffuse the room. But yeah, I remember that. I'm going, when a shuttle bomb disposal squad is a tension reliever, you know things are tense in the house.
Well, Tony, thank you very, very much for... I'm sorry you couldn't make
it
to the studio.
I'm sorry, this is the first one of these I've missed. I feel bad, Alan. I was calling you on your mobile, and of course you're on air, so you've gone to your quite elaborate message. There's a lot of music trivia in your message on your answer machine. I'm learning music facts just listening to your mobile.
What have you? Are the publicity commitments almost winding down now, or you're going to be on Kerri-Anne Kennelly soon?
See, I've already been on Kerri-Anne. Once you've been on Kerri-Anne Kennelly and you're playing apparently part of the bloke's advice panel, and it's me and hairdresser Joe Bailey, I think I'm going, this must be near the end.
It's diminishing returns, really, isn't it?
I think so.
Well, Tony, it's a pity that marathon runners have kept us apart, but as always, it was absolutely delightful to talk to you, and the book is just wonderful, so thank you very much for writing it.
Thanks, Alan. Cheers, and as always, top music. I love listening to what you're going to play on your show every week.
Well, thank you, Tony. That's a lovely thing to say.
How about Shoop Shoop Diddy Wop Come and Come a Wang Dang?
It's like you read my mind. And then I'm playing the theme from Danger UXB.
I certainly hope so.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Alan. Cheers.
Tony Martin's new book, Nest of Occasionals, is available at the moment. You're listening to me, Alan Brough, on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria, and it is almost 5 to 12.